Your Excellency, Mr. Secretary General Rutte, esteemed Director of the University of Sarajevo, professors, students, members of diplomatic corps, journalists, and NATO representatives. It is my great honor to welcome you to the Faculty of Political Sciences. Today's event is a testament to our commitment to open dialogue and to the strong partnership between Bosnia and NATO. We deeply appreciate Secretary General Rutte's leadership and engagement, especially at a time when security challenges require unity, determination, and strategic foresight. While public opinion in Bosnia-Herzegovina may differ on certain aspects of NATO integration, a clear majority firmly supports the country's Euro-Atlantic path. NATO has been a key pillar of peace and security here, playing a decisive role in ending the war and securing the Dayton Peace Agreement. The alliance's continued presence remains essential in preserving that peace, especially now when we are witnessing deliberate attempts to undermine the country's constitutional order and push Bosnia toward instability. At this critical moment, NATO's engagement is more important than ever. The recent opening of NATO's political cell in Bosnia is a significant step in strengthening cooperation and institutional resilience. From the outset, this office has demonstrated remarkable activity, reinforcing the alliance's commitment to supporting Bosnia in maintaining stability. Any threat to the peace and security of Bosnia is also a challenge to NATO's credibility and a direct risk to member states that share borders with our country. Instability here could have a domino effect on the wider region, affecting not only our immediate neighbors, but also the broader Euro-Atlantic security framework. This is why NATO's continued engagement is essential, not only through political support, but also through concrete actions that reinforce Bosnia institutions in defending the constitutional order, ensuring that those who attempt to dismantle the country's stability are held accountable under the law is in the interest of both Bosnia and the broader transatlantic security architecture. Secretary General Rutte, your visit today carries immense significance. It sends a clear message of NATO's commitment to Bosnia and its institutions. I look forward to your insights and to a discussion that will further strengthen our partnership in upholding peace, security, and democratic values in the region. With that, I now invite you to take the floor.
Well, thank you, Professor Trusolo. It's great to be back in Sarajevo and to see the students from the university as well as, I believe, from Mostar and Istočno Sarajevo. So welcome to you all. Sarajevo is a beautiful city at the crossroads of cultures, where the past and the present come together. As a student of history myself, I've always been fascinated by this region's really complex past. And as a politician and a pragmatist, I'm excited about your prospects for a brighter future. I visited Bosnia-Herzegovina just over a year ago, together with my good friends, Commission President Ursula von der Leyen and Croatian Prime Minister Andrej Plenković. And I was here then in a different capacity as Dutch Prime Minister, and of course with a different mandate, to urge your political leaders to press on with the reforms necessary for the EU accession negotiations. But my message was the same. This country has an historic opportunity to set aside all differences and seize new possibilities. New possibilities that will put you firmly on the path of peace and prosperity and allow you, the next generation, to flourish here in the heart of Europe. During my last trip, I visited the memorial center in Srebrenica. And I met with the mothers and sons who will never know that promise of a brighter future. It was a deeply moving experience and a tragedy that forever connects your country and my country. But while war defined your past, it should not determine your future. This year we mark 30 years since Srebrenica and 30 years since the Dayton Peace Agreement ended a conflict that cost over 100,000 lives across all communities. Dayton might not be perfect, but it remains the cornerstone of peace in Bosnia and Herzegovina. And it must be respected by all sides. Through IFOR and SFOR, and now supporting the EU's operation EUFOR Althea under the Berlin Plus arrangements, NATO has been with you every step of the way. We are working together with you to build a stronger defense and security sector and to modernize your armed forces in line with NATO's high military standards, including through our defense capacity building projects and your participation in NATO exercises. Because security creates the conditions for your economy to grow and for all citizens of Bosnia and Herzegovina to prosper. Our NATO headquarters in Sarajevo and our newly established, as you said, Professor, political cell also support your reform efforts. NATO and the European Union complement one another. Reforms that your country implements through its partnership with NATO can help you on your EU path. But unfortunately, we have seen a rise in dangerous rhetoric and political infighting. Statements alluding to the end of Bosnia and Herzegovina are deeply troubling. Threats of secession and inflammatory actions are eroding the hard-won security of this country and are dangerous. They risk derailing your progress and taking you back to a divided past. My message to your political leaders today was that it is time to put that past behind. It is time to show leadership and have the courage to move forward together for the benefit of all. NATO is firmly committed to Bosnia and Herzegovina's sovereignty and territorial integrity. We will not allow a security vacuum to emerge or the hard-won peace to be jeopardized. I'm sending the same message of responsibility and reconciliation to your neighbors in the region too. Tomorrow, I will be in Pristina, where our KFOR mission helps to ensure a safe and secure environment for all communities in Kosovo under its UN mandate. I also spoke to President Vucic before coming here. Serbia is a long-standing partner of NATO and an important country for regional stability. A stable Western Balkans region matters for us all, and I want to see everyone in the region working towards this goal. You only need to look to your neighbors in Croatia, in Montenegro, and in North Macedonia to see the benefits that Euro-Atlantic integration can bring. I know that different views persist, of course, on NATO membership, but that in the end is a sovereign decision for your country and your country alone. In the meantime, NATO will continue to build on our strong defense and security cooperation and support your path to reform and reconciliation, because your future is worth striving for. Dear friends, I know the University of Sarajevo, like NATO, celebrated 75 years since it was created last year. 75 years of bringing new ideas and perspectives for your country and beyond. Now the baton passes to you, to the next generation, to close the door on a troubled past and work together for a strong, stable and successful future. The history of this city, this country, and this region is deeply enmeshed with Europe's destiny. your future should be too. So thank you for your attention, and I really look forward to our now starting discussion. Thank you so much.
Simply, we will open the floor to the students' questions. So, please.
Do I need a microphone or is it okay?
Yes, coming.
Hello, everyone. I want to say good afternoon to everyone here present in the amphitheater and to the respected Dean and Secretary General. Your Excellency, I want to begin by offering my warm welcome to Sarajevo and a huge thank you for the Alliance's continued support in Bosnia and Herzegovina's sovereignty. And it's like you stole the words from my question. my name
we
is
have
Dia.
To prepare together. Eh? So,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. My name is Dia, and I'm a student at the Faculty of Criminal Justice and Security Studies here at the University of Sarajevo. And as a part of the next generation of leaders, I was one of the NATO Student Challenge winners. And
very good.
Speakers at the this October's P360 symposium, and I would like to ask you about a significant part in the NATO 2030 plan.
Yes, perfect.
2030 plan. Amongst global threats and emerging challenges in security, the plan addresses the importance of younger generations in the process of decision-making. So in what ways do you see NATO collaborating with local governments in the Western Balkans to involve younger young people in security and defense efforts, helping them see themselves as a key contributor to regional peace? Thank you.
Very good question.
We will put one more.
First of all, good afternoon, and thank you for your time. Thank you for visiting Bosnia and giving us the time that we actually need right now. So, considering the escalating political crisis in Bosnia and Herzegovina, particularly the actions of Milorad Dodik to effectively erase state competencies in the territory of entity Republika Srpska, how does NATO plan to respond to ensure stability and prevent further escalation?
Well, to start with the first question, of course, in NATO, we are working with many young people. When you would come to Brussels, maybe you've been at the headquarters. There are many young people working there, and it is really important. I'm so happy to hear that you are so motivated to do this, also studying at this wonderful institution. So we need young people to get involved, and security, our collective defense, it is worth striving for and spend time on. And we cannot leave this to the senior generals or to the senior older politicians. We need the young people to really step up. And by the way, I hope that you will live by the creed of saying sorry afterwards and not always asking for permission at the beginning, because that is important. Otherwise, nothing changes. So try stuff and push the boundary, push the envelope. And I guess you will. So thank you. And on the Dodik question, I already this morning had a press conference, and I made all the statements about us supporting the territorial integrity, the sovereignty. We will not accept a security vacuum. We want to work with Bosnia-Herzegovina to really further the NATO Bosnia-Herzegovina Security Corporation, of course. And we call upon all people here to accept when state institutions come to certain verdicts, to accept them, including upholding the office of the High Representative and the Dayton Peace Agreement. Having said that, this is not the whole answer, because there is more. And that's what I also very much stressed this morning, and that's about leadership. Because I know that some senior politicians here are irritated by the office of the High Representative, so you can endlessly debate it. But why have stuff get coming there? But why not solve it before it gets to the High Representative? Because then you really take the power of this country back in your own hands. And this was basically my challenge to the Troika, the senior, the presidency, the three members of the Bosnia-Herzegovina presidency, saying, well, I know you are hugely divided on many issues, but you are the only show in town. Because you can point to whatever direction, but you have to do it. And I know them all three very well, two of them very well, the chairwoman,
And the Bosniak member, the Croatian member, I've met a couple of times, but they all three, I think, have what it needs to do it. But then you have to sit together, you have to dialogue, and you have to take this country forward. That's really crucial. So don't delegate this to a high representative. And when you ask me, of course, I will uphold that office. I will fully say that I'm behind it because it is an integral part of what we got out of Dayton. But it cannot be the whole answer. So stop quarreling was my message and start taking the leadership of this country in your own hands. And I think the three of them could do that. So I hope they will. It's really important because we are at a quite vital juncture now in history.
Okay. Thank you.
Sir. I think it's working.
Hi.
Yeah.
Welcome to Sarajevo. My question is how closely is NATO cooperating with the European Union and the other international actors to address Republika Srpska leadership threats to sovereignty of Bosnia, and what additional steps can be taken jointly? Thank you.
Hello, welcome to Bosnia and Herzegovina. Thank you for coming in this time of needs. And my question for you is, how concerned is NATO about Russia's hybrid warfare tactics, including disinformation, campaigns, cyber attacks, and political interference in the Western Balkans, particularly given their potential to exacerbate ethnic tensions and undermine regional stability?
Well, thank you for both questions. On the first one, NATO is not here particularly looking at Republika Srpska. We are here to help for you guys in Bosnia-Herzegovina to build your armed forces, to get things going, and to support, of course, what the European Union is doing here. But it is not particularly geared towards Dodik or Republika Srpska or whatever. Of course, we are worried, and that's why I'm saying we cannot have a security vacuum in Bosnia-Herzegovina, and we need for leadership to take responsibility. On the second question, this is a broader issue, not only the Western Balkans. And we have had a huge debate in NATO about this whole issue of hybrid threats, which I think sounds a bit cuddly. And these are not hybrid threats when you look at what happens all over Europe, not only Western Balkans. The cutting of undersea critical infrastructure in the Baltic Sea, the assassination attempt of the CEO of Rheinmetall, the undercutting by cyber attacks of the National Health Service in the United Kingdom, the jamming of commercial planes on the eastern flank of NATO. This is all taking place, and this is why, as an alliance, we are really stepping up now to make sure that we not only register what is happening, but also then act upon it. And that can be sometimes in an asymmetrical way, it can sometimes be direct. But for example, what we have now done in only 6 or 7 days, we brought together this Baltic Sentry mission in the Baltic Sea after on the 25th of December this undersea sea cable was cut between Finland and Estonia. And we had a summit meeting early January on this. And here the interesting thing about NATO is that it can be sometimes a bit bureaucratic. But I found out that when the Supreme Allied Commander Europe launches something which is called an activity and not a mission, that we don't need 32 countries to approve. So from now on, we will only have activities and no missions. And I'm kidding. But this one was really successful because it was brought together in only 6 or 7 days. It was under his remit. He could do organize this. And I fully applauded it because we have to react faster. And the Russians hate it. All the evidence we are getting is they hate it because they see this, the East Sea, the Baltic Sea, whatever you call it. They also see it as their sea, which is logical because, of course, St. Petersburg is also, that port is also connected, of course, to the Baltic Sea. But it's not only their sea, it's also our sea. And when ships from the Shadow Fleet are cutting critical undersea infrastructure, we have to act. And that's what we're doing now. So this is an example of how we have to do this. Yes, Western Balkans. Yes, sometimes hybrid threats, sometimes all these kind of campaigns, but it is happening all over NATO territory, and we have really to get a grip on this, and we are doing it now. Thank you. I should look at you. No, at you. This was your question. Yeah, two of you. Yeah.
Sir.
Okay, it's working now. Good afternoon. I would like to stay relatively on topic with the cyber threats question. There's recently been an AI summit in France where the EU has pledged about 150 billion, correct me if I'm wrong, to AI development. Following that, France has pledged an even greater amount of money in an AI program of their own. And after the two events, J.D. Vance has stated that the United States are planning to remain a leader in J.D. Vance has stated that the United States are planning to remain a leader in the AI development. So my question is a two-part question. Are you worried that there may be a rift in the AI development happening within NATO for its uses for defense and security? And is NATO planning on developing programs for the use of AI in defense and security of their own?
Okay, good afternoon. I hope that you enjoy staying in Bosnia and Sarajevo, regardless of the topics that you are for in Bosnia. My question is, during recent NATO meetings, you stated that Ukraine must negotiate from the position of strength. So how would a potential peace settlement perceived as favorable to Russia influence nationalist and separatist movements within Bosnia and Herzegovina?
Thanks. Yeah, on the first question, I mean, this is a healthy competition. I think we need the U.S. here, because the U.S. is the leader on many of these developments. Look what happens on the West Coast in the U.S., in Silicon Valley. It's about the size of the half of the country I come from in terms of the economy and the impact it has. About half a trillion economy there in Silicon Valley, in the Bay Area, so around San Francisco. And so much of all of this innovation and entrepreneurship and the startup, some literally still starting in the attic of the garage think of this, and in an almost romantic way. But this is still the United States. And I'm not sure that you can completely get into competition with that from the government. I'm not so sure. And in the EU, sometimes people think that huge government investments will somehow then bring you into competition with some of these entrepreneurs. You need both, by the way. You need, of course, investments in your, like here in Sarajevo, in the university, and other knowledge institutions. You need that. But you also need a conducive environment for young people to start a company, to be successful. You need a culture in which success is celebrated. Instead of, oh, you earned a lot of money, so now you're a bad guy. No, it's positive when you earn a lot of money. Myself, I'm not so much interested in money because I have other stuff on my mind. But if you love money, get it and be successful. And I applaud you, because probably you will then hire people. You will start new things. You will invent something, whatever. So I think you need both. And so I'm both with France and the EU on this, but also with J.D. Vance. And him saying, I didn't know that quote, but if he said the U.S. will stay ahead, that's the sort of competition we need. That's positive, and that will not hurt NATO, because in NATO, when it comes to AI and quantum computing and all of this, we have programs to make sure that when it comes to the defense application here, we work together. We do it in NATO headquarters in Brussels through all kinds of initiatives, but particularly important here is Allied Command Transformation under Admiral von Jay, who works from the U.S. To make sure that all over NATO we get our hands on the latest technologies. And in the past, they would think about the world in 2100. But since a couple of years now, and particularly with this new admiral leading that operation, it is not only about the world in 2100, but also about the relevance now. For example, this Baltic Sentry mission uses some of the insights from, when it comes to sea drones, some of the insights from this Allied Command Transformation. So we grab that together. A bit of a competition is no problem, and particularly not between the U.S. and the EU. That's good. That keeps us all sharp. And again, speaking to the EU, create a conducive environment for young people to start companies and celebrate when they are successful. It really helps. We cannot only do this from the state side. And on the second question, I mean, I think it is good that President Trump tried to break the deadlock on Ukraine. But of course, there is no peace deal yet. This is all still work in progress. There will be a meeting tomorrow between the Ukrainians and the United States. There has been a meeting between the United States and the Russians. And we'll have to take it from here. And in Europe, people are thinking of what could a security guarantee mission look like, if that would be necessary to preserve a ceasefire slash a peace deal in Ukraine. But I think President Trump is right. There is no peace deal yet, I would argue. But at the same time, you have to think, of course, already how to preserve a peace if it comes in the future. And there are many models to do that. And one of the models is now being worked through by the French and the Brits. So I think that is all positive, and hopefully we will get there soon. But obviously it has to be a good deal, because there is one guy who will at the end judge the outcome of all of this, and that is the General Secretary of the Communist Party of China, Xi Jinping. And if he feels that it was Russia coming out on top and not the West, he will start thinking, hey, that's an interesting development. What does it mean for my ambitions? And we know his ambitions. In the Pacific. And we know that the U.S. is very worried about that. So we need a good deal for the Ukrainians, but also for world peace.
My name is Ayla, and first I would like to thank the faculty's management for providing students lectures.
Speak louder, a bit louder.
I would like to thank the faculty's management for providing students lectures and conversations from prominent figures of political and security world, and I would like to thank you, sir, for accepting that call and being willing to answer our questions. So given the recent political crisis caused by Milorad Dodik's secessionist moves in Republika Srpska, how does NATO see its role in safeguarding Bosnia's territorial integrity, especially if internal destabilization is encouraged by external actors like Russia? Thank you.
Greetings and welcome. I have one question.
Who is that?
Here.
Yes.
Again, welcome. I have one question. How can we prevent the spread of fear? I mean, we have the situation in the eastern part of Bosnia, in the Republika of Srpska, that those Bosniaks who are returnees are fleeing in fear. I mean, we have like 40 people fled from eastern Bosnia in fear. How can we stop that? Thank you.
Yeah, well, the two questions are a little bit on the same subject with different angles. And again, first of all, it's up to you. This is a sovereign country. So it's up to the Bosnian leadership to deal with this. And that was my message this morning, because I am always a bit amazed, sometimes a bit puzzled, that when you speak to senior Bosnia-Herzegovina politicians, that they start to question you about Dayton, yes or no, about the high representative, yes or no. And my reaction always is, hey guys, if you don't like it, take things in your own hands as a collective. And that's why your presidency has so been well designed, because you have the three big groups here in Bosnia-Herzegovina represented in the presidency as it is currently organized. But that means moving from commenting on things to taking leadership. And they can. I mean, as I said, I know them all three, so why not? And it means dialoguing. It means sitting together. My country was built. I mean, my country would never have existed with all the infighting we had through the ages if people would not sit together and try to build bridges and maybe have agreements to disagree, etc. But part of that, of course, is accepting realities. And there is a court ruling, we have data, we have the high representative, and all these institutions need to be respected. We have UFOR Althea here, with the full backup, of course, of NATO and support. NATO particularly busy here with helping you to build your military and your capabilities in the security domain. By the way, when you speak to your politicians, they could spend a little bit more on their armed forces. 0.78% is even less than Luxembourg, and Luxembourg is the absolute laggard at the moment in Europe when it comes to defense spending. So please, at least surpass Luxembourg, you could. And this, you could say, Luxembourg is very rich. Yeah, but this is a GDP key. Yeah? So this is how much you spend compared to your GDP. And then 0.78%, and then almost 90% of that spent on salaries and not on other stuff. It's not good. So it has to be increased. And I very much push that message, both with the presidency as well as with the chairwoman of the Council of Ministers, because that is important. But again, NATO is not here to focus on Dodik or Republika Srpska. It is here to help you to keep this country safe. And as I said, we cannot have another security vacuum in this country. It's not acceptable.
So, hi, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, maybe if you...
Yes, I'll try. Yeah. All right, so hello, everyone, welcome.
Thanks.
My question is, and I completely agree with you, that our leaders should take the leadership and try to find a solution together out of this and not rely that much on the international community. However, the Dayton Peace Agreement and the constitution of the country, especially the power sharing, the ethnic power sharing that we have, I believe makes it a bit difficult for the three presidents and 14 governments to take a joint leadership. So do you think that maybe a modification of Dayton with the assistance of the international community would be a way to help the country, the young people, etc.?
Hello, once again, thank you for visiting our faculty and our country. Let's say I'm a future Bosnian politician and you are my political advisor. How would you advise me for my country to enter NATO when I have half of the country who doesn't really like NATO? Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure that even I then would be able to solve that. But to the second question, and by the way, thank you all for being so extremely welcoming, and thank you for being here again. It's really a wonderful opportunity, this exchange. Again, NATO, yes or no, membership and becoming an ally is a sovereign decision for every nation. So in the end, you've got to somehow solve that. And if you understand that you will be in favor, so let's assume you are the senior politician here, it means dialoguing with your colleagues. And by the way, when you do not agree yet on exactly the outcome, design a roadmap. And the nice thing about NATO and Bosnia-Herzegovina is that we have a roadmap. Maybe not officially declared, but when you look at it, we now have an agreement on the reform program 2024. We hope to have an agreement on the reform program 2025 soon. This DCB package, we are working on that. Again, it is not an alternative for more defense spending here, but it helps in other areas. We are working on bringing the relationship on a more secure footing in terms of what is called an ITTP. Is that the right abbreviation? And that is a sort of program which builds on what we are doing so far, but much more detailed. And we have that with many countries. So that's all happening. And that's exactly what I said this morning. We might not agree on yes or you might not agree yes or no NATO membership, becoming a full ally. But we do agree both on practical steps going forward. And then sometimes when you do that, you think, hey, this is great. We should have more of this. Well, if you want even more, you have to become a member. That time comes. Not yet, but at a certain time, you would say, yeah, we even now have the full deal. Why not become an ally? And that's also to the other question on Dayton. I think if you look in the 50 or 100 years, you probably would not have Dayton as it is now. Probably you have made changes to it. But again, you have to do it with the three constituent peoples, the three big groups in this country together. It's again about dialogue, and again this could be about a roadmap if you want to change things. And again, it could start by taking the affairs in your own hands. So not complaining about the high representative, but not needing the high representative because you take your own sovereign decisions. But then you need to agree with the three groups. And I think that's possible. And the good thing about the design of that Troika presidency is that they all, of course, have their own relations with their own real constituents, so not only constituent peoples, but let's say constituencies. they have those relations, they can dialogue with them, they can move forward. So that's how I would do it. When you do not agree on a roadmap. It always helps. You have to do it step by step. But at least take decisions. And as Tony Blair said, there's nothing, you can take sometimes wrong decisions. The worst thing is not taking decisions. That's the biggest risk. Your voters will always accept wrong decisions. They will not accept not deciding.
Can you hear me? Okay, perfect. Okay, hello everyone. Thank you again for coming, sir. I'll just cut to here.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'll just cut to the chase. You already previously have emphasized the importance of renewing the mandate of EU4 in Bosnia. My question is, if this renewal were to face any obstacles, like, let's say, Russia vetoing it, what would be any contingency plans from NATO for security and stability for this country? Is this going to be just reinforcing the existing mission, or it's going to be forming a new one, like stabilization forces till 2004?
First of all, welcome to Sarajevo. My name is Yahya. I'm a student of the Faculty of Criminology. So I guess, first of all, like, young people in Bosnia are currently concerned about their safety due to some anti-constitutional actions from Republika Srpska. So can you please convey this to our partners? I guess my question would be, is there any reason for people to be concerned about a potential war conflict in Bosnia and Herzegovina? And in that case of a potential war conflict in Bosnia, how would NATO respond? Would NATO be in support of Bosnia in that case? Thank you, and...
Yeah, both are what-if questions, and what I found today with all the senior politicians I spoke with, nobody wants a return to the 1990s. Nobody wants that. And as I said, NATO would not accept a security vacuum. So nobody wants that. And the European Union, EU4 is here to help you guys to make sure that this country is as safe and as stable as possible. So obviously, if, for example, on EU4, if that would not work out, I think it is in November up for re-election, Tom, I think, in the Security Council. Last November it went well. If not, I will not here then speculate about what then might happen, because I'm fairly cautiously optimistic that when it was, we were able to continue it last November, we will do it again in November this year. And if not, we will sit together and make sure that we find a way out. But I don't think that will happen. There is widespread support for what EU4 is doing here. And as you know, last week, the European Union announced to invest even more in EU4. And make sure that given the situation, wherever necessary, they would put extra people in. So that's all very positive. So I would not speculate about that. And the same about if things go wrong here in terms of the security situation. Yes, there are tensions now about Dodik, about Republika Srpska, I know. And that's why I'm calling upon everybody to stick with legal court rulings, the legal procedures, the political traditions you have established in this country, because in the end, it will be the institutions and the leadership of the politicians filling those institutions which prevent this spinning into more than a political issue. It should stay a political issue and it should be solved. But in the end, I strongly believe that before you come to some international body or to a high representative, that it should be your pride and your wish and your sovereign right, by the way, to decide it yourselves. But then you have to agree with the three groups. And again, I cannot think of a better body than that presidency, which then presents itself to the people instead of presenting their disagreements to the people.
Hi, sir. Ivan from Security Studies, Mostar. I would like to ask you if event of realization of possibility announced by President Trump about exiting NATO, What would be your vision about life of NATO in future? Thank you.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm Arne Selec from International Relations and Diplomacy in Faculty of Political Sciences in here. You have talked a lot in your previous answers about the need of collaboration, of working together in the presidency between free ethnic groups and all of that, and that's the only solution possible. And while I think all of us generally agree that that's the way it should be, let's respectfully take a step back and analyze who are we supposed to work with. The largest party in Republika Srpska is Dodik's party, which gets the most votes from the citizens, which is a pro-Russian secessionist nationalist far-right party. Would you go to Germany and say to their citizens, well, you should work with AfD because, well, you know, you should collaborate? Would you go to Austria and say to them that they should work together with their far-right party? I think when we're speaking about working together, we are either ignoring the fact that we are supposed to work with a far-right party from Republika Srpska. Do you honestly see a way of doing that? How do you envision that working together in the presidency? I mean, do you really honestly see Zeka Cvijanović and the other two members of presidency agreeing? Do you really see the parties in Republika Srpska agreeing with stuff that is beneficial for the state of Bosnia and Herzegovina?
But what is then your solution?
Well, currently our best bet is working with the opposition in Republika Srpska. Arguably, they are not far better, but yeah, that's currently like the best bet, working with anybody that is not Dodik. But you can see that we do still have a problem.
Do you think that they will be very enthusiastic to work with you if you talk about them like that?
Well, I'm not
extreme
saying
right wing, and even the opposition is worse, etc. You're saying all that,
but they are.
I don't know. I'm not an expert, but I don't think it is a good start.
But
for
they
the
are that. They are. They are right wing party. They are that. I mean, just because, they are that. I'm not saying anything that's not correct. Now, just because they are not willing they are not willing to work anyway. We are starting from a supposition that those parties are willing to work for the benefit of the state. Dodik is never going to work for the benefit of the state. So we have already tried that. I mean, those who follow the political situation can see that, for example, the Troika from the Federation, they have tried to work with Dodik. That has also failed. So it's not like we haven't tried the recipe of trying to work together. But that obviously isn't going well.
But at the same time, you cannot, 30 years after Dayton, still leave it to Mr. Schmidt from Germany to decide. That's strange. That's not a sovereign country. So I support his position, again, that you don't misunderstand me. I think it is good that the High Representative is here, full support. But in the end, for Bosnian politicians, Bosnian-Herzegovinian politicians to refer to somebody from outside the country is not grown-up behavior. I really don't think that is. And that's why I'm saying you've got to find a way out of this. And you have to organize yourselves. You are all highly versed, very communicative, very well phrased in your questions. So bang on the doors of those politicians and make this happen. And don't hope and stop hoping that somebody outside this country will save you. In the end, I said NATO is committed totally to our relationship. We are committed to your sovereignty and territorial integrity. We will not accept a security vacuum. But having said all that, it would be strange that some outside body would have to deal with this.
But respectfully, we haven't created this system. The international community did.
Created them so after 30 years. You are the next generation.
Sort of
it's your
responsibility
country.
Towards us.
created. It is your country. Hey, on the Donald Trump question, he made clear last week three times, again, that he is committed to NATO, committed to Article 5. So that's absolutely clear. And we had a meeting last week with the ambassadors in Brussels, and some were worrying and saying, yeah, but can he not be a bit clearer? I said, well, you could also have turned on your television, because he was very clear three times last week. Or 2 weeks ago it was, when we had the visits of Starmer, Prime Minister UK, and President Macron, and also the first half hour of the Zelensky visit. He was extremely clear, committed to NATO, committed to Article 5. I was on the phone with him. I hope to visit him soon, and I have no doubt there. U.S. is committed to NATO, but they expect the European side, and by the way, also the Canadian side of NATO, to spend much, much more on defense and have a fair burden sharing, which is totally logical, because we are really funding some of our social programs here in Europe because the U.S. is spending more on defense than we are, and that's not fair. So there is totally right. And when you look at last week, the $1 trillion announcement in Germany, the $800 billion announcement coming out of the EU, the announcement from Denmark, the UK and others, the Czech Republic, Belgium, we are getting there. We are ramping up defense spending, so now we have to produce. That's the next problem, produce enough defense industrial products.
Hi, well, once again, thank you for coming here and answering our... and answering our questions. I have a question considering the United States of America and how much influence the United States of America has on the Western world, especially the Balkans, and the political situation that is currently happening there with Donald Trump taking up presidency. How do you see that political situation affecting Bosnia and Herzegovina?
Give the mic to the other side.
Hi, it's an honor to have you here. I have a question on the part of the DCB program. So DCB.
DCB, yeah.
Yeah. NATO and the other partners are committed to invest in our armed forces, BIH. I have a question on the DCB. It's a 54 million euro investment plan for BIH. Is it possible to take some part of the money, invest in our homemade defense companies, so we produce, make jobs, and etc., stronger armed forces for our country? So is it possible to some defense companies from NATO to have here with our defense companies make a mutual agreement like?
Of course, I would know the answer, but I wanted to make sure that the team is involved.
No? Right.
thank you.
Good afternoon. Other side of the room.
Yes, this side we are ex-students, actually. Okay. Thank you for coming, and it's really an honor to be here with you. Let me share my biggest concern regarding EU4, actually. Dodik has already proposed that the EU4 should be deployed on the entity line in order to, as he said, prevent a conflict that actually no one is announcing at the moment. On the other hand, my opinion is that deployment of EU forces on the entity line would create actually a new factual situation on the ground. That's one thing. And the other thing is that it could actually protect the secessionism in a one way, and my opinion is that that way we could easily end up here as a Cyprus. So could you tell us what is your position in that hypothetical situation? Should it be bring it that way? It doesn't matter if it's AFOR or NATO. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, on the first question, U.S. and Bosnia-Herzegovina, history made the United States the leader. But this leader has made clear, and I understand completely why, that they have to pivot more towards the Indo-Pacific. And they expect us here in this part of the world to take a fair share of the burden. And as I said, with all the money now being invested in defense last couple of weeks, all the announcements, that is no doubt going to happen. But that means that going forward, the U.S. will play a big role in Europe, will play a big role in the Western Balkans, and will be very relevant. And always is my impression and my experience with the U.S. trying to balance as much as possible all the security interests we collectively have. So I'm optimistic about that. About the DCB, I don't think you can use money to invest in your own defense industrial base. I think that really has to come from the state budget. And again, 0.78% is a bit low. So call your politicians and spend more. What we are doing, of course, through the DCB is strengthening capabilities in areas like crisis management. I would know this by heart, of course, but I just want to make sure that the people making these Q&As know that I use them. The capabilities in areas like crisis management, cyber defense, countering terrorism, enhanced armed forces of Bosnia-Herzegovina's interoperability with NATO. And this year we launched programs of activities in a number of domains, including counterterrorism, cyber defense, air evacuation, military police, and crisis management again. So that's good, but not to this is not moving money from one budget to the other. Yeah, then to your question, there's press in the room. It's not a closed session with just a few people where you can start to think of what if and then what if and then what if. So I'm a bit hesitant on going into all these what ifs. Because then it is not that I'm complaining about journalists, but they rightly would then write down, hey, Rutte was speculating that if this happens, then that, and then such, and then so. And I still think that we will be able collectively to solve all of this if cool minds prevail and we stick with some of the rules we collectively agreed on, and also in the interest of not going back to a situation we faced 30 years before. And EUFOR really plays a big role here. And NATO, of course, is smaller in setup, but still very much involved in Bosnia-Herzegovina through the various activities we have here, working closely with EUFOR, so EUFOR Althea. So I'm optimistic, but I won't go into some of the things you just mentioned, because that would really bring me into three levels down of what-ifs.
Just two more questions, but now from the journalist, and we have it actually to finish.
The journalist, Daria, if they want to. Yep. How do we know whether he is a journalist or not? Yep. How does a journalist look like?
Mr. Rutte, Daria Šito, Sučić, Reuters News Agency. I mean, you already mentioned something, and there were questions about actually this U.S. request for more allocations to NATO and for defense. Actually, I just wanted your comment on the last week's statement by Donald Trump saying, U.S. President Donald Trump saying, if NATO members don't pay, U.S. wants to defend them. Does it mean that there will be differentiation between the NATO members regarding how much they are giving, you know, how much of, you know, percentage of GDP they are giving for defense? You yourself mentioned 0.7, probably from Bosnia. But, you know, there are some NATO members who are giving less than 2% of GDP, which is now, or 3.5%, which will be required very soon. So does it mean actually that their defense, if they are attacked, will depend, actually the U.S. support in defense will depend on how much money they will give? I mean.
Maybe going into, or, yeah, sure, yeah.
Can I? Yep. Yep, that's me. My name is Mirza Softic. I'm here. My name is Mirza Softic, Al Jazeera. The journalist as well. Welcome in Bosnia. It is mooi om u hier te zien.
Hey,
thank you. I'll continue in English because of the others. I used to live in the Netherlands for quite a while. I don't know any prime minister but you. I've been there for 13 years.
The Netherlands is still democracy, but I was a bit.
Yes, let's say that. Yeah. So my question is: we actually hear all the time. The phrasing, partnership with NATO, working together, working on this, working on that. But we don't hear anymore going towards NATO membership, both of Bosnia and Kosovo. So I would like to ask you clearly, are we going towards NATO membership or are we not going towards NATO membership? I know it's up to us, but what do you think? Are we going or not? Both Bosnia and Kosovo. Thank you.
Yes, well, I'll start with that question and come to your question. At the end, you gave the answer. It is up to the Bosnian authorities, of course, Bosnia-Herzegovinian authorities. For me, very difficult to predict. What I'm seeing is a deepening cooperation. With everybody I spoke to today, was very positive about taking the next steps. And we all agreed that where there is a disagreement about yes or no applying for full membership, for full becoming a full ally, a full-time ally of NATO, that it doesn't make sense to discuss that, but to indeed stick with the immediate future, which is building on what we have. And that's what we are doing through the DCB, through the IPPP, the fact that the reform program was agreed now for 2024 in March this year. And the Council of Ministers told me they want to adopt the reform program for 2025 soonest. So I'm positive about that. And then we'll take it from here. I cannot predict the future. But I think this is good that we do this together, but it's very difficult to predict exactly what happens. And on the question of spending, I mean, Donald Trump has been very clear on that he expects the Europeans and the Canadians to do more. By the way, he started this in 2016 when he became president, 2017, and he was very successful in his first term in ramping up defense spending in Europe, and since he became president again, the numbers coming in now are really staggering. As I said, Germany, when you look at the announcement the incoming coalition has been making last week, that was more than the Zeitenwende of 2022. It's about 10 times the Zeitenwende. When you add it all up, it is 1 trillion, I believe. The Zeitenwende was 100 billion. So this is an amazing amount of money, an amazing new development by the Germans, probably also having a huge impact in positive sense on their economy, because it is not only defense spending, but also infrastructure and all that. The defense part, or the other part, of course, NATO has no position, but I think it is that people will like it in Germany, but the defense part, I really applaud. The European Union, the 800 billion package, agreed in 2 days. It was announced on Tuesday, and on Thursday, the European Council agreed. Well, I know the days when this would take you a year and a half to agree on half of this, and now it happened in 2 days. And again, all the other countries. So he has always been completely clear. We need to spend more because the security situation has changed, particularly now with Putin and Russia ramping up defense production, but also China becoming more and more of an adversary. Look at their navy is now bigger than the U.S. Navy. One of the issues, by the way, Trump mentioned in his State of the Union, that the U.S. should start building Navy ships again. Yes, and European companies can help. But that means making some changes to the rules in the U.S., one of the things we are discussing. So this is positive, and the overall defense spending is positive. So, and the ones not on 2%, I told them, I said, you've got to get there before the Hague summit. Not in 2029 or 2031. You have to do it before the Hague summit. And I'm happy to see that now, for example, Belgium has said we will be there before summer. And some of the others I really hope will follow. And then we have to decide in the Hague based on an assessment of the security situation which we are making currently, the so-called capability targets and the gaps coming from that. What the new number should be, and it will be much, much more than 2%. Considerably, I think, more than 3%. But for an exact, precise decision, we have to wait a couple of weeks, maybe 1 or 2 months, and hopefully before The Hague we can get there. But the ones not on 2% really have to get there.
So, Mr. Secretary General, thank you for spending this hour with us and for engaging with the students. I hope that your next visit will be under better circumstances here in Bosnia-Herzegovina. Thank you very much.